Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy. Jake Heaps leading the show today. Stacy Ross is out. Hopefully we will get her back soon. But in the meantime, got Curtis Rogers here joining me. And then we've got DJ behind the glass producing the show. So
we got some familiar faces just in different places.
Exactly. That is very true. And you know what is familiar is what caught my eye. And let's get right to it. All right. One of the things that caught my eye out of many is Daryl Taylor. Daryl Taylor has all the makings to be the next great pass rusher here in Seattle. We've seen it. We've seen flashes. But then when you watch that sack that he had and literally him bend around the edge, duck down underneath the tackle, you know how athletic you have to be to do that at full speed?
I couldn't do that. You couldn't do that.
I couldn't dream of doing
DJ
that.
DJ couldn't do that.
I mean, it's truly incredible, and when you look at his production, what he's been able to do from a pass rushing standpoint, he has been the lone bright spot in that aspect. Now, don't kid yourself. He's making a bunch of dumb rookie mistakes in the run game, and he's hurting the team at times with, you know, being out of his gap and out of his alignment and assignment, but those things are going to come. He's going to learn from all these things, but the big thing that really jumps out to me is that sack that he had in that game. So impressive. Cut number 7 here.
Here's a second down and 5. Heinicke finally hit and brought down by Taylor. The Seahawks have been getting oh so close. Collier was close. And Daryl Taylor on second effort brings down Taylor Heinicke for a loss of 4 yards.
In the midst of a lot of questions about where this team is going to go, Curtis, and what do you do and how do you build around it? Well, one name that you do know that you can build around is Daryl Taylor, rushing the passer for the Seattle Seahawks for the next couple years, and that at least is a positive.
One of the brightest spots of this 2021 team has been Daryl Taylor and his production, and I think he is a guy that you want here. Obviously, next year and the year after that, who knows if he'll get that contract extension that so few rookies get here in Seattle. But I think Daryl Taylor has been one of the most encouraging things about this team. In a year full of a lot of discouraging things, Daryl Taylor is somebody that I don't have anywhere near the kind of worry about him
right.
that we did this time last year where he wasn't even on the practice field.
Oh, man, it's such a big difference.
Jake, what caught my eye last night was that time of possession. Ugh. Now, let me take you back to December 13th, 2020, about a year ago, 2 weeks from now.
Okay.
Against the New York Jets. The significance of that date, that was the last time the Seahawks have won the time of possession battle. It's been almost a full calendar year since the Seahawks controlled the ball for the majority of the game.
Are you kidding me?
Last night wasn't even close. The Seahawks had the ball for, what, 18 minutes in the game?
Yeah.
Out of a 60-minute game? I mean, yeah, they nearly pulled it off last night, or at least forced overtime. But for a team that values the ball as much as they do, Pete Carroll, all about the ball, how can you say that when you are not controlling it for even close to halfway of the game?
You know what the crazy part is that for the majority of the year, the time of possession battle has been heavily because of the offense. And last night was no different, especially the second half, right? But if you look at the first half, the defense, they don't help themselves in the style in which they play. They allow the easy completions. They allow the things to happen in front of them. And one of the trade-offs is the fact that you are going to stay on the field longer as well. I mean, the offense doesn't hurt you or stop you from giving up a 15-play drive in the second possession of the game for 68 yards that took 9 minutes and 25 seconds. Then you go again in the second half, at the beginning of the second half, 10 plays, 50 yards, 6 minutes of a possession. So again, I'm not saying it's not the offense's fault, because it clearly is. But you just factor in that side of it too, it certainly doesn't help the equation. And even if the offense was playing better, I still think the time of possession would be an issue for this team in the ways that they've struggled on third down offensively and the style in which they play defensively. It just has not been a good mix, a good combination whatsoever. And that number, Curtis, is staggering.
Yeah, almost a full calendar year. And it goes way beyond the Seahawks offense relying on big plays in order to get their scores. It's being poor on third down efficiency offensively and defensively. It's having a non-existent running game. It's poor play calling. It's everything that factors into this time of possession and why the Seahawks have not been able to hold on to the ball when they have it or to get off the field when the other team has it. It is just, it's like banging your head against the wall every single week.
Yep.
Expecting something different to happen, and for a full calendar year, it has not changed.
No, it has not changed, and that is another reason why you sit here at 3-8, and we talked about the top of the show. Seahawks, right now, this organization, the philosophy, all these different things, it's broken. And when you don't have good enough answers to fix those solutions, sometimes it does come down to pure execution. Sometimes it does come down to Russell Wilson three times in the game, just literally just hit the open guy. You see it, you're throwing it, and you're missing it, right? Uncharacteristic mistakes. Sometimes it is, you know, the offensive line just flat out not getting it done and getting ragdolled out there. But it's been the same series of issues, maybe not in the same form or the same exact way, but same things keep popping up, and I don't see it changing anytime soon, unfortunately. I'm staying with the defense here, if you've noticed, because that was the only real bright spot in this game. Now, I have my fair share of issues with the defense and, you know, different aspects about it, but make no mistake, they were the only reason why you were in that game at all at the end. And they played their tails off. And one of the things that I really appreciated from the defense was that they were running and hitting last night. It wasn't perfect, but, man, they made you pay. They played with enthusiasm. They played with energy. They battled their tails off. I mean, just think of that last stand that they had to give Russell Wilson and the offense the ball, that last possession at the end of the game. I mean, they had to stop the Washington football team as they were driving and within, you know, the 10-yard line.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they made another big key stop. They made key stops after key stops while the offense was in a serious drought there in three and outs. And they kept coming up with – I was shocked that Washington kept trying to run the football into the teeth of the Seahawks defense. But here, cut number eight, you just kept hearing this defense rising to the occasion.
Jared Patterson, and he gets the handoff, and he's not going to get there. Again, good play. Rasheem Green at the bottom of the pile. Bobby Wagner, the middle of the pile. And Adams there as well. Great play by the Seahawks defense.
I mean, it was very impressive to watch that group. They didn't have a whole lot going for them. They didn't have a whole lot of momentum, and they didn't need it. And that's what great defenses do, Curtis. They don't. It's nice. Don't get me wrong. It's nice, and it gives you a shot in the arm when you see your offense go down the field and score and hold on to the ball and do those things, but not using any excuses as to why you can, you know, loaf or why you can miss an assignment. And I give a lot of credit to Bobby Wagner, Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs. Jordan Brooks played better that way. Just everybody. You could tell that they went out there with the mission to really prove themselves, and I thought that they should have... There should be a lot of respect for what they did.
Hey, they generated a turnover.
They
tips
did.
Tips and overthrows.
Got to get those.
Jamal Adams, he went and got it. Second interception. Does a block kick count as a turnover? It was on an extra point, so it doesn't.
I don't think so.
But what a play that was from Rasheem Green. Let's take a listen.
On for the PAT, and it gets blocked, and it's picked up by Rasheem Green, and he's a rumbling down the sidelines. He's across midfield. He could go and pick up a couple of points for the Seahawks. He's got blockers in front. Rasheem Green all the way to the other end zone. 75 yards. They threw a flag on you earlier, young man, but you make the highlight film with that one, the block, and he takes it the other way. Does Rasheem Green for 2 points? We've got a tie ball game, 9-9.
Now, as that play was developing, after the block, Green picks it up, and he's already got Washington specialists on his back. And you've got DJ Reed and Ugo Amadi to his left.
Right.
I am yelling at my TV, pitch it! Pitch it! And he didn't. And I'm just like, what are you doing? This is 2 easy points. Luckily, Rasheem Green looking like Derrick Henry out there with Washington guys just flying off of him as he's racing down the field. He gets in the end zone for the 2 points. Play of the night for both teams right there from Rasheem Green. That, to me, caught my eye. I so wanted him to pitch the ball back and get one of those guys who has the ability
right.
to return a kick or return anything.
Would have made it so much more easier.
Oh, yeah, but no, Rasheem Green, he was like, no, I got this.
He was
Don't you worry.
He was not looking back.
Look, I was made a fool. I was made a fool because of Rasheem Green.
Well, the funny thing is that you weren't alone because DJ Reed was yelling at him.
Yeah.
You could see him. He was running next to him and yelling at him to pitch it. And I was thinking the same exact thing. Oh, my gosh, all he has to do is pitch it to DJ Reed, and this is a touch. This is 2 points.
Uh-huh.
Why are you not doing it? So, yeah, an incredible display of athleticism from Rasheem Green. And honestly, he had himself a pretty good game in this one. It missed some sack opportunities, which drove me wild watching this defensive line not finish on the quarterback. But overall, I mean, Rasheem Green takes a very frustrating touchdown in that series to then getting yourself to a point where, hey, it's 9-9, it's anybody's ball game, it's 0-0. So that was an incredible turn of events. All right, I was going to complain about the refs because I truly do believe they were making a case for themselves to be the new team mascot for Washington there at the end of the first half. I mean, what are we talking about? That was unbelievable. What are you doing? There were three horrific calls that they made on the Seahawks defense that gave Washington life, that stopped, you know, a big third down stop or a sack. Or it's unbelievable, Curtis.
Well, and I'm pretty sure Washington fans today are saying the same thing about the refs because they let Sidney Jones get away with a pretty blatant pass interference at one point where Sidney Jones got up and pretended as though nothing had happened.
Right.
And celebrated like he had made the pass break.
That was my favorite. I said I was not going to complain about that, so I'm not. So what really caught my eye is, look, we've talked about Russell Wilson. We've talked about his struggles and that he is not playing up to the standard that he needs to play at for this team to have a chance for it to be successful and really for the expectation that we all have for him. But this offensive line, Curtis,
brutal.
It's bad. It's bad. Like, I'm watching the film on this, and it is awful. Ethan Posick, Kyle Fuller just got absolutely blown up all game long, ragdolled. In the run game, in the passing game, I mean, it was a tough, tough watch. And you just look at some of the issues and overall offensive identity and why are you not running the football and why can you not get back to, if Pete Carroll really wants to be this style, you keep pointing to the running back, Chris Carson's out. Well, I'm sorry, Chris Carson would have a whale of a time trying to run with this offensive line right now. And part of it was the matchup against Washington. They've got two really good defensive tackles. But Curtis, this offensive line, they have just been flat out bad. And it is something that you can't ignore.
You can't. And we thought they had addressed it this offseason, but clearly there was a lot more heavy lifting that needed to be done outside of acquiring Gabe Jackson because...
Go figure.
Because what we have seen this season has been... It's been unacceptable.
Well, and it's really hamstrung your offense is what it's done. I mean, you have not been able to lean on, rely on any aspect of it. So even if Pete Carroll, like in that Saints game, for example, he wanted to run the football. He wanted to will his team to be that identity and carry that mantra and carry that attitude and that swagger that they were going to be a run-first-oriented team, that they were going to be the baddest dudes in the block. And they just don't have that group. And I think that has been a very, very disappointing aspect to this season so far. So All right, that is it for what caught my eye. Let's get to Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru, Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, Jake. I got to know, what was going on with Russell Wilson last night missing wide open wide receivers?
Well, I think it's very understandable for people to keep asking about the finger and does he still not have the feel? Is he still injured? And I don't believe it has anything to do with the finger. I really don't. And so if Russell Wilson's not using it as an excuse, Pete Carroll's not using it as an excuse, I don't think it's something that should be pointed to. So what I see is what I talked about in the Green Bay game in his first game back, which was decision-making, which was not being in the flow and in the rhythm of the game. But what I see is a player that is not, I'm trying to find the best word for it, and it's escaping me. What I'm witnessing from Russell Wilson is he's pressing. That's the best word that I can use, is pressing on some of these third down throws, pressing on some of these throws that are, you know, quick, get it out of your hands underneath. And you don't typically see that from him. And you know that the offense is not playing well. You know that everybody is focused on that. You know third downs is a hyper-focus for everybody. And everybody wants to make that a solution, not a problem. And so when you see these uncharacteristic mistakes, I see Russell pressing. I see it leading to mechanical issues. And what I mean by that is the way that he's throwing the football, the way that he's using his body to throw the football rather than, you know, staying tall and just trust it and letting it go. And that is a combination of a lot of things, but that to me comes back to the idea of, is Russell Wilson truly comfortable in the pocket? Is Russell Wilson truly comfortable with the concepts and everything that he is seeing and reading and reacting to? And right now, I think he's pressing a little bit, and that's the one explanation that I can give to you as I'm watching Russell make uncharacteristic, inaccurate throws on throws that he knows where to go with the football, but just isn't getting it done completing it.
Second down. Jake, why did the Seahawks not try to run the ball more last night?
Why did they not try to run the football? Well, Pete Carroll would say, well, we need more running attempts. We need to convert on third down. But what I would tell you and argue with you is you could have 30 rushing attempts in that game. I don't think it makes a bit of difference. I think Washington's defense and their defensive line was just flat out better and more dominant than the Seahawks offensive line, just straight up. And so I don't know why we're not addressing the actual issue. I don't know why, you know, it's the fallacy of more run attempts, because that wasn't what is more run attempts going to give you out of, you know, bad execution and bad, you know, mismatches in one-on-one matchups. I mean, that's just what I witnessed. And now when you're running the football on first down to start drives, and you're getting yourself behind the behind schedule, behind the sticks, getting yourself into obvious passing situations, just thought all of it was just an entire mess. And a big part of it is because the offensive line just is not getting the job done.
Yeah, when I look at a team that averages 1.8 yards per carry in a game, you know what I think? Let's do that more often. Third down. Jake, why did the Seahawks not get DK Metcalf involved sooner?
Honestly, because I didn't see any concepts where you could get him involved sooner. There wasn't a concerted effort enough to try and get DK Metcalf the football. There were plays designed for him, but the problem, Curtis, is that those plays that were designed for him that would have opened up, there were a couple of them that you could see, if Russell Wilson had more time in the pocket, that there's going to be a wide open completion to DK Metcalf down the field. It's going to be a big explosive play. But what do you need for that to happen? You need time, right? And so you can't rely on these big crossing routes all the time to get DK Metcalf involved. You've got to find quick intermediate throws to be able to get him the football. Do something. Right, someone had been texting the text line. I think they stopped because they just given up at this point. But give him a fly sweep. Give him something. Get the ball in this guy's hand. right, and get him involved, because the fact that he didn't get the ball, an attempt thrown to him until really the end of the third quarter, doesn't get his first catch into the final drive of the game, you can't have that happen. Can't have that happen.
Fourth down. What impressed you the most about the way Seattle's defense played last night?
Their effort. Just straight up. Their effort, their enthusiasm, their juice that they played with the entire game. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't perfect all the way through. But if a guy made a catch, they hit you. And they knocked you on your wallet. And that was something that we have not seen from this defense really all season long. They showed up with a different swagger and different mentality last night than we have seen them all season long, even when they have been playing well. And so that was something that I really enjoyed watching. They got to clean some stuff up, and they made it pretty easy on Heinicke, you know, when it came to, you know, hitting the running backs in the flat, hitting the tight end over the middle of the field, underneath middle of the field. But overall, they played extremely well. They played with a lot of heart, and that was something that as a Seahawks fan, you look at, and you should be pretty darn proud of that.
It's four down territory right there.
All right, that's four down territory. Brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Don't forget, you can watch the show live on 710sports.com/video. All right, coming up, we've got the timeline. And we've got some pretty crazy coaching carousel going on right now with a move that sent a shockwave. No, it's not Lincoln Riley. It's another move in college football. That's coming up next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Welcome to The Timeline. This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Curtis, we've got more trouble in paradise when it comes to Believeland. Cleveland, the Cleveland Browns.
I think that's the first time anybody's called Cleveland paradise.
It's not? Oh.
I don't think it would be considered that.
Well, I mean, I do think it's trouble in paradise because it's not just Odell Beckham Jr.'s dad that has an issue with Baker Mayfield. Now Kareem Hunt's dad, Kareem Hunt Sr., is the latest family member of a Browns player to rip on the team's play calling and on Baker Mayfield on social media. Curtis, it makes you wonder, what the heck's going on? Is this just a bunch of disgruntled, you know, parents that are
outspoken? Yeah, do the dads get together and just grumble about how little their sons get playing time in Cleveland? Kareem Hunt Sr. posted on Facebook, said yesterday, now I'm getting people on my Facebook saying I'm being like OBJ's daddy, and I'm not. I'm stating facts on football, and what we see is he's limping, he's scared to throw the ball, and they know he's hurt, they know he's going to keep listening, but if people don't like what I'm saying, unfriend me. I'm not jeopardizing nothing. I got a right to speak. I ain't posting no videos. Have a good day. Go Browns. Hopefully. He's obviously talking about Baker Mayfield in that quote right there.
Right. What do you make of it?
I mean, boy, I thought Kevin Stefanski would be a coach that would have a better handle on these things, that would keep the noise down. And he had a great year last year as the head coach for Cleveland in his first season. This year, things have not gone to plan. And we've kind of seen a lot of these personalities that Cleveland has taken a flyer on, Odell and Kareem Hunt. Obviously, Kareem Hunt with a lot more red flags about him than a lot of people in the NFL. You know, obviously he talks to his family members as all players do. And I'm sure he talks about the frustrations of his role in Cleveland, where he's not the feature back, even though he definitely has the talent to be a feature back, which, you know, he was in Kansas City. I would imagine somebody who knows they have the talent to be one of the best backs in the league and is not being utilized in that way, that would be very frustrating.
Yeah, no, it would be. It would be very frustrating. And but at the same time, I mean, he's had success in Cleveland. It's not like hasn't been utilized. I mean, him and Nick Chubb were considered the best 1-2 punch in the NFL. And so it just makes you wonder how things are really going on with Baker Mayfield. And is his leadership style wearing thin on guys, or is it just noise on the outside? And Kareem Hunt, in this instance, is going, what are you doing, Dad? Like, you're putting me in a terrible position right now that I'm having to answer for. You're creating drama. that's hurting the team. And quite frankly, it's exactly what's going on. And now Baker Mayfield's having to answer questions about OBJ's dad and now Kareem Hunt's dad and all these different things. It's always hard being a quarterback. It's even harder when it comes down to whether or not you have lost the locker room or whether or not your leadership, you know, style and play is in question. And I think that that is what Baker Mayfield is dealing with. And a lot of it, to me, is unfair just because this guy's battling through so much injury just to be out there on the field for his team.
Yeah, shoulder injury. But do you think that Baker Mayfield's personality and I guess leadership style tends to wear on guys?
Yeah, I do. I do. Yeah. I mean, honestly, when Kevin Stefanski first showed up, he had a meeting, a one-on-one sit-down with Baker Mayfield and pretty much told him, look, you got to stop running your mouth. And if you can't just focus on football, play better football, and stop being an off-the-field distraction and having a comment about everything and everyone, you're not going to be the guy here in Cleveland. And last year, you saw a better, rejuvenated Baker Mayfield, and you saw that offense really come together, and there became a lot of hope. And so now that there's adversity again and adversity striking with injury, with tough losses, you start to see that kind of getting ripped apart at the seams a little bit with Baker Mayfield. So I think he's up against it, and he's got to find a way to get everybody to rally around him and believe in him. And, you know, but I do commend how tough he is. I know he's playing through a lot, and that should earn a lot of points with a lot of the guys in that locker room. But when you see, you know, silly turnovers, when you see mistakes that he makes, you know, you start to see some of that get pointed out here. All right, let's get to the next story. All right, Brian Kelly is leaving Notre Dame in the middle of a college football race to take over, Curtis, LSU.
I don't think we've ever seen this in college sports, where a team is on the verge of playing for a national championship, because Notre Dame has a very real shot at getting to the college football playoff. If Alabama loses and if Michigan loses this Saturday, I think there is a very real shot that Notre Dame gets into the playoff. And now you're looking at a team that is going to be led by probably an interim head coach. They probably promote like one of their coordinators to that job. You don't have Brian Kelly there, who has been with the program for over a decade now. And he leaves to go take over an LSU program, which is just a couple years removed from a national championship of their own. But why would you want to lose out on an opportunity to win a national championship now? I guess LSU wanted to have a commitment now because of signing day being in, what, 2 weeks?
Yes.
But, man, that would leave a terrible taste in my mouth if I were a Notre Dame player, seeing a coach, somebody who is telling you to get up every single week and prepare for this moment, prepare for this time, and they duck out right as you're about to play for the biggest games of your life.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, honestly, I think it is wild. And college football is one of the weirdest sports in terms of just coaching in general. But football, it's so cutthroat. And you could have a coach 1 minute, and the next minute he's gone. And it's just, it's crazy. But you just look at LSU, what they did, and really putting down a godfather offer where, you know, Brian Kelly couldn't refuse. I think that there's also, for Brian Kelly, an opportunity to join the SEC, join the likes of Nick Saban, compete on that front. It sounded like a lot of what Brian Kelly's role started turning into at Notre Dame was more of a booster role, whining and dining boosters, than it was actually, you know, focused on football, focused on, you know, the recruiting trail, focused on the X's and O's, the things that he really is passionate about. So I do believe that that is another aspect to it too. But man, this is a huge ripple effect in college football. And now you have seen two premier jobs in college football where head coaches walked away from successful situations, not situations where they're 1 foot in, 1 foot out, or they're about to get canned or anything like that. I mean, they are rolling and they walk away from those to join, you know, other blue-blooded programs.
I think it's hilarious that Oklahoma and Notre Dame are the two schools that get left in the dust here, and those are the two schools that routinely get blown out in the college football playoff.
It just keeps getting worse.
The hits keep coming.
It does. The hits do keep coming. That is for sure. Want to get this story in here before we have to go, because this is a pretty cool story. Michigan head coach Jim Harbaugh. Things are going pretty good for him right now. They took down Ohio State for the first time since he's been there. And Jim Harbaugh also has announced that he will donate any bonus money he makes this season to the Michigan Athletic Department employees who took a pay cut amidst the COVID-19 pandemic. So he made $500,000 from clinching the Big Ten title on Saturday. And he could make up to $3.5 million if Michigan wins a national title.
Boy.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, the Michigan Athletic Department has got to be loving themselves from Jim Harbaugh right now, which is a stark contrast to where they were feeling about him, what, 4 months ago?
Yeah, how quickly things
can
turn.
He had the hottest seat in the country, and he then turns in one of the best seasons that Michigan has ever had, going 11-1, beating Ohio State. They're playing for a Big Ten championship this weekend. And I'm sure Jim Harbaugh feeling a little bit eager to help out after beating Ohio State, saying, you know what, I'm feeling in a good mood. I'll, divvy up my earnings. If they had beaten Ohio State, I don't know if he would have been lose out on those bonus checks.
Maybe not. Maybe not. And he definitely he wouldn't have gotten those bonus checks to begin with. So he's definitely feeling generous right now during the holiday season. All right. Coming up next, right now, Kalen DeBoer is being announced officially as Washington's next head football coach. We are going to tell you why they made the right choice next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
Welcome back. Listen to Jake and Stacy. Jake Heaps leading the show today. Stacy Rost is out today, and I've got Curtis Rogers next to me filling in. I've got DJ Wilder producing behind the glass. We want to talk about the Washington Huskies here and why they made the right choice in hiring Kalen DeBoer, who they are officially announcing today on Montlake. It's
right
going
now.
On right now. You're seeing quotes come in. You're hearing him talk about how he wants to get to know the alumni, how there will always be a home here for the alumni, how he thought that this was always supposed to be home. I wonder if that's true. He always thought that. I
was he thinking that in Sioux Falls?
I don't know. I don't think so. But hey, everybody's riding high right now. So I think that when it comes down to it, Curtis, for UW fans, they, I believe, were searching and seeking for a bigger hire, right? The expectation, the desire that you can lure a Matt Campbell, a Dave Aranda, that you could go out and be aggressive and pull one of these big fish away from their current programs to come coach at the University of Washington. That didn't happen, large part because they didn't want to leave. Yeah. And you didn't throw enough money at them to make it interesting enough for them to want to come here. So out of the next crop of coaches that were available to you, I think Kalen DeBoer is a very good hire and is somebody that obviously there is some risk there, but I think the upside is certainly you could see it and you can see why just the demeanor of Kalen DeBoer and everything else that he's going to bring to the table could be a very good match here at Washington.
What I think is great about this hire is that it is not a retread. This is not somebody that has been fired from a place and is looking to resurrect his career and by doing it through being UW's head coach. That's what happened with Tyrone Willingham. This is a guy that has climbed his way to where he is now, and this is the next rung on his ladder.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you hope that you don't – it's not a situation where he uses this as another stepping stone to get an even bigger job. If there's, you know, massive amounts of success.
Don't talk about
years.
That. This is the biggest job he could possibly get, Curtis.
Yeah, you're right. How could I ever think that a job is bigger than Washington, as all Husky fans would so quickly tell me this is the greatest job on planet Earth. But look, I think Kalen DeBoer is a guy that has had success everywhere he has gone in college football, whether it be at the NAIA level with Sioux Falls or as the offensive coordinator at Fresno State, the offensive coordinator at Indiana, the head coach at Fresno State. Success has followed him wherever he's gone. Yeah, it hasn't been at a Power 5 program outside of Indiana, but you don't think of Indiana as one of those classic powerhouse football schools. But just because he has not led a Texas or an Oklahoma or an Ohio State or whatever,
right,
doesn't mean that he can't be successful in the Power 5 game. I mean, we just talked about Brian Kelly a segment ago. What was his job before coaching, you know, Notre Dame? He was the head coach of Cincinnati.
Right.
And before that, he was the head coach of Central Michigan.
Correct. You go to, you know, Brock Huard, I think, pointed this out very, very well, is that, look, there's iterations of this where you hire from a lower conference who has someone who has had tremendous success wherever they've gone and have continued to have success. I mean, Jim Harbaugh, you know, going from San Diego to Stanford, Matt Campbell going from Toledo to Iowa State, Urban Meyer going from Bowling Green to Utah. I mean, those are some really big names that you mentioned there. How about, you know, I mean, Chris Peterson had an amazing run of success, was even more successful at Boise State than he was at Washington, but he goes to a Power 5 school and he gets them in the college football playoff. So Kalen DeBoer is far from being named that kind of guy or having those kind of expectations, but I do believe there is something there, and there's a reason why this guy is successful. And full disclosure, we had at 12:30 coming up, we have Fresno State's football play-by-play guy, Paul Loeffler. He is coming on to talk to you guys and tell you what Kalen DeBoer is all about. We interviewed him earlier today, and you're going to love a lot of things that he has to say. I mean, rave reviews.
Yeah, and it's not often that when a coach leaves a program, those who are still in the program speak very highly of them.
Right.
That is not the case here with Paul Loeffler when he talks about Kalen DeBoer and just what he has meant to the Fresno State program over the last couple of years.
And the stability that he brought, the attitude, the demeanor in how he led the program at Fresno State and the mentorship that he took on with all of his players. And obviously with Jake Haner, you see the development. It wasn't pretty. It was not a rosy start for Jake Haner. And eventually he grew and developed and matured in this offense with Kalen DeBoer. And you see him be one of the more successful college quarterbacks today, right? Well, so I think that part of it, when you talk about development, you talk about having that success, having that background with Jeff Tedford and Jeff Tedford being a big reason why DeBoer gets this job today. I think that there is a lot to like there from an offensive standpoint, but there's still questions about recruiting. There's still questions about who is he going to surround himself with? Who's going to be his defensive coordinator? All those things that we were anxious to hear about.
Well, and when Jeff Tedford was an offensive analyst for Washington, that was during their college football playoff run back in 2016. Back when the offense was putting up staggering numbers, you had guys like Miles Gaskin and John Ross, and Jake Browning was the quarterback. And this is when Jake Browning was a Heisman Trophy candidate, which seems like forever ago. But that was the case up until the last few weeks of that season in 2016. And Tedford's fingerprints were all over that offense. Tedford obviously has a lot of influence on Kalen DeBoer, as that's who brought him to Fresno State in the first place as the offensive coordinator while Tedford was the head coach. And then DeBoer went to Indiana, came back to Fresno State as the head coach when Tedford retired. I mean, there's a lot of influence there. And the Huskies, like I just said, had their best offense, at least over the last decade, while Tedford was a part of the UW program. I'm not saying that DeBoer is the same kind of coach, because Tedford has been successful everywhere he went. He had Cal rolling for a lot of years there.
Yeah, he did.
But I think there is reason to be hopeful for UW after this hire, even though it is a name that I would say before this week, 95% of college football fans in this town, very unfamiliar with.
Very unfamiliar with. But that doesn't mean that he can't rise to the occasion and be a great hire. You know, so if you can get over the fact that they didn't go out there and spend a ton of money to bring in a big-name guy, I think once you get past that aspect and you really dig in and you dive into who Kalen DeBoer is and what he's about and his success and his story, he was somebody that I was extremely intrigued with from the beginning when you heard his name being thrown about. And the name that I will give you that it reminds me of a Brandon Staley, who is now the head coach at the Los Angeles Chargers.
He had a very meteoric rise, too.
He did. It was crazy. Yeah, but when you have success and you know who you are and you know what you're about and you're a good football coach, that translates anywhere that you go. So, obviously, there's a lot of reason to be optimistic in the state with Jake Dickert, you know, being named the head coach now. You add Kalen DeBoer. You know who the head coaches are going to be of both programs, who's going to be steering the ship. And I'll be very, very curious to see if both of these guys can have success and what they try to establish in their respective programs. All right, it's time to announce this show's Seahawk code word. Head to 710sports.com/win and enter the code word Bobby, as in Bobby Wagner.
Okay.
By the end of our show, to be entered to win two tickets to see the Seahawks host the 49ers on Sunday. Remember, this code word expires at the end of our show, and you'll have another chance to win with Wyman and Bob. Details and rules at 710sports.com/win. Remember, enter the code word Bobby. Okay, don't forget, you can listen to us on the go or catch up with the show if you miss it. Subscribe to the Jake and Stacey podcast. It's on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Please don't forget to rate and review if you do subscribe. We really do appreciate it. All right, we're getting back to the Mariners, talking some Mariners, talking about Robbie Ray, talking about maybe some of the other additions that they can make with the one and only Ryan Divish from the Seattle Times. That's coming up next.